Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Joan.
Thank you for the summer series. When I'm an audience, I'm really, really happy to be listening. When I get asked, I'm like beside myself with joy. Thank you, White Whale. Thanks, Halsey. I can't imagine the city without you guys. I don't want to imagine it without you guys. I'm going to read prose, which means I cannot just chit-chat between things. 2020 was my 50th year on Earth, and I've been writing a lot of different things. One thing I've been writing in letters back and forth with Wendy Scott Path. I'm going to just read some of those. June 25th, dear Wendy. You know how useless advice is sometimes? But the way I see it is you should put at least one coronavirus poem in that manuscript. Every manuscript from now on will be either pre-COVID or post-COVID. Also, COVID literature is a thing. The truth is political work has become a rock in my throat nowadays. I can't stand the incessant CNN blather I hear downstairs. Another truth, I've been writing love poems, but not to my husband. June 30th, dear Wendy, A thinks I need to get out more, but as soon as I agree, I say to myself, nah, I'll become a hermit instead. The Bachillis are infamously antisocial, you know. I actually had a great aunt after terrorizing one third grade class after another, retired and refused to leave her apartment. Then she refused to allow us in. Then she refused even to brush her teeth. That's what we heard. Before she died, her in-home care nurse told us she also had Alzheimer's. But as condition of her employment, she was sworn to secrecy until my aunt died. We let her go on about the details of that last decade without questions. We envied the separateness and the quietude we imagined was theirs. One of my uncles spent his 70s tending a chicken coop, eating outside of it, sleeping under the nearby tree. Not a modern chicken raising facility where they keep the poor animals indoors. This was a half acre with a large barn coop, so run down that the shape of it was no longer clear to anyone but the oldest among us who remembered it whole. The roof curtsied down toward the ground, where the chicken stepped up to roost or stepped down to eat with my uncle in the first outdoor kitchen I had ever seen. Rubble piles were three walls where three walls used to make the corners. Rusted metal cabinets nailed to the only standing wall. Their doors dangled open to reveal a cup, a dish, a hen. Besides a pack of abandoned dogs, no one visited except to wander about him from the road. I'm sort of warning you. I have strong inclinations toward hermithood, which is best lived mad. July 17th, dear Wendy. When I traveled the border towns of Central Africa, I began to imagine changing my life, or more accurately, I considered for a moment changing the details of my life. I would be myself writing and teaching, but on a cattle farm deep in country with someone who had fallen in love with me. It was a preposterous idea, though I couldn't shake it or this person for months. Even when my work schedule occupied all my energy back home, I canceled my WhatsApp account so it was easier to make the possibilities disappear. The day after my return, my husband surprised me with a gift, something I had on a bucket list when we first met. The year of my first book, I will buy a Porsche with the money I get from the deal. There is so much of that initial wish that did not come true. There is no money for poetry chapbooks, of course, you know that. Implicit in the wish was that I would buy the Porsche. These conditions were never met, but that's how I came to have that boxer out back, the one he restored and kept in storage until my return. I walked into the garage of a house he was renovating. I fell to my knees when I saw it. I felt electric, as in electric chair, electric. It would not change my life, and whatever I was feeling would be shelved. This man, my husband, was granting wishes, as he often did for me, rendering me childlike, and him gracious and loving. I wasn't going to fly to Cameroon, after all, where there were roaming gunmen anyway, seizing the university offices or my friend work. And any change in my life faded into a naive dream. Instead, I committed myself to making my marriage more of what I wanted. He met my attempts with patience, and then with, "You're acting like Mrs. Roper." I returned to my side of the couch and to my nightly outrage about the chaos under Trump, but I thought about that old TV show when he alluded to, a show I hadn't thought about for decades, Three's Company. I considered it as a question now. Is Three company or a crowd? June 25th, dear Wendy, a few nights ago, he took me driving in the Porsche. The roof was down and he drove into the dark countryside. The sky was clear and I tipped my head so far back, I imagined a guillotine and then I forgot it. I could not see the road or the little brick mid-century ranches that periodically appeared from the shadows. The road was mostly empty. I tilted my head far enough back that all I saw was the night sky. And underneath me, underneath both of us, the car swerved and shoved us left, then right. He made the curves tight. I was selecting one song at a time to sing with the phone speaker between our two heads. Each song, he would say, "Oh, that's a good one." Sometimes we both squirmed at my off-key singing Tracy Chapman's Fast Car, of course, Beatles' Bluebird, Tom Petty's Good Love is Hard to Find, James's Laid, Amy Winehouse's You Know I'm No Good, Enzo Iannacci's Vengo con Anch'io No Tu No. I couldn't remember Obladi, Oblade, but then we remembered it together. My arms stretched into the air above me. The wind from the racing car was the resistance I felt, and it held me. It was thrilling. He asked me if I liked it. I liked it. He passed mostly empty buildings, the area asleep and depressed, but at a lit convenience store against a wall, we passed the dark silhouette of a couple kissing. They were the same height. They looked the same age. She had longish hair and a loose ponytail. His was a middle-aged bald head and a shapeless t-shirt. They were locked in a kiss that didn't look like a married couple's kiss. And so I let out a hoot, loud enough to reach someone outside the car, but not loud enough for the couple who didn't break their embrace or unlocked their mouths. It felt mythic and magical, cinematic and meaningful. He asked me if we should get on the highway or keep moving down country roads. I don't remember saying anything clear. He filled my hesitation with, "Let's keep going," and I didn't disagree. It was the lockdown, but we were outside and something about it finally felt like happy. When we got home, it was as if we had been in a noisy airplane engine. And so we didn't say anything to each other until we went to bed. And in the darkness of our room, under the sheets and the ceiling fan, we talked about what we were going to do. Should we try therapy, an open marriage? He had never done therapy, so I imagine it would be too slow for what I wanted. Though I didn't know what I wanted. I said, "Let's wait when we are out of the lockdown." "In the meantime," he said, "I think you're depressed. You haven't left this house for 5 months." He said, if it were him, he'd feel the same way. But luckily, he said, he was an essential worker. August 13th. Dear Wendy, today, the Porsche and I were part of a parade for a heart transplant patient who survived his first year. It was A's idea to volunteer. We decorated the vehicles with blue and green streamers. He drove his fire truck, so I was alone in the convertible. I felt like crying all day, but also cupped my hands into a heart shape for the hospital workers who were waving on the side of the road. Neither A nor I knew where the patient was exactly. Had he watched the 20 vehicles circle the parking lot? What were we doing, I wondered. This sweet play in which everyone on the side of the parade was inexplicably rooting for us. That's it, guys.